high is the bad word for the night, sorry. Shalom, right? I'm Shani Solo, and I'm the Dean at Machon Gold, and I've been asked to chair this session. When I got the invitation from Atid, I probably was the first person to respond because I was so pleased to see that there had been an initiative taken to discuss this topic that I think has been so taboo for so many of us. And despite all of the openness of the discussion this afternoon, I think it still is very much a topic that ultimately is taboo for many reasons because of many of the things that were said this afternoon in terms of image, in terms of fear of reputation, and everything else that we all deal with on a daily basis in our school. Nevertheless, I think it's wonderful that so many people got together to discuss the problem, and hopefully out of a discussion will come some attempted solution as well. A little over a month ago, when my sons came home from their high school and yeshiva on Purim, I got a little bit of a jolt of what exactly we need to worry about in the yeshiva world here in Israel. I have one son in a yeshiva tichonit and another son who is in a yeshiva hesder. And the son of yeshiva tichonit came home from the Purim Chagiga, not the Suda, complaining about how he was tired of being the listener for all of his confessing drunk friends and how unpleasant it was to be in a yeshiva atmosphere where they were rolling out the cases of vodka all night. This boy is between the ages of 13 and 18. My other son got in very late, and when I asked him what happened, he had spent a good part of the night at Terem with his roommate who had been so drunk that they were afraid for his health, and therefore he, as a designated driver, drove him to Terem and took care of him for the night. So much for the Purim experience in yeshivas in Israel. So when we talk about substance abuse, and when people say that the problem is a problem of Israel as well as America, certainly from my vantage point, it's a problem that we all have to deal with, and it's a problem that exists not just on Purim, but every day. And Baruch Hashem, we have people who are willing to discuss the problem here this evening as well. Our speakers are going to look at the question, really, of what the problem is. We've heard the clinical perspective on it, and now we're going to hear from the educators in Yeshivot how they define the problem, because before we define the problem, we can't possibly solve the problem. The three speakers for the evening, in the order in which they will speak, are Dr. Carolyn Pizer, who is a Ram at Midrashet Lindenbaum, as well as a psychologist in private practice, Rabbi David Ebner, who is a Mashgiach Ruchani at Yeshivat HaMivtar, and Rabbi Israel Blumenfeld, who is a Mashgiach Ruchani at Yeshivat Nevei Tzion in Tellstone. The format for the evening is as follows. Each of the speakers will be given approximately 15 minutes to present their views, after which we will be happy to entertain questions from all of you. And at the end of the evening, each of the speakers will be given a chance to sum up as well. Please jot down your questions during the course of their speeches so that you will be prepared to attack them when they're done, but we will hold the questions till all three of them have spoken. Okay? That's Pizer.
Thanks. I think that actually this is what I'm hoping, that the three of us are really talking about different programs, different populations to some degree, and rather than conflicting, we'll hopefully be going like that, but we'll see. I'm going to be talking about the experience that I have at Midrashet Lindenbaum, and I guess there are three points that I'd like to make at the outset. The first is that I think that there's a difference when we look at this problem between men's yeshivot and women's yeshivot. First of all, the prevalence of drinking in the general population as well as in the religious population is different for men and women, much more prevalent for men. Alcoholism is much more prevalent among men. And in fact, in the yeshivot, I think that this is true as well. So I think that the meaning of drinking for girls and for boys is different. If you hear that your son or one of your students, a male student, got drunk on Purim, he's part of a large majority. If you hear that a female student got drunk on Purim, I think that many of us would be somewhat taken aback because it's not the common practice, and therefore I think the psychological meaning of a student doing such a thing is different than for a guy. So that's the first thing that I'd like to say, is I think that there's a difference between drinking among women and drinking among men, and the attitudes in the general society and specifically in the religious society as well. The second point that I'd like to make that I understood was made earlier, but I'd like to reiterate it, is that I think that with any, like with any issue or problem that comes up, I think that we have to keep in mind the context in which this problem is taking place. And I'm specifically addressing the issue of drinking among the one-year program students. And I think that's important to keep in mind at what point in life they're at. They've just left home, but physically they've just left home. Everything that's been going on at home is going with them. They could be 6,000 miles away from home, but whatever problems they've left there, they've taken with them. And I think that it's important to keep that in mind, that this is a major transition point where they're leaving their parents' home for the first time and lots of issues come up as a result of that. Problems that they had beforehand continue generally. They take it with them to Israel. I think many parents wish or hope that if the child has a serious problem, going to Israel will straighten them out. They might not indicate the problem on the forms so that the child will be accepted and that they can get a fresh start. But those of us, most of us who have experience with it, know that that's not true. They take the problem with them. Similarly, I think that issues that are going on at home affect the students when they come to Israel, and that it's important in understanding whatever issue comes up for the students to understand it also in the context of what preceded it, what's been going on at home, what was going on in their family, etc. In my experience, the students who have the most difficulty adjusting in general to their 1 year in Israel at the beginning are the students not who get along well with their families, as we might think, but the students who have problems back home, whether it be a parent's illness, a parent who's being treated for cancer, marital problems, etc. So that's the second point that I'd like to make. And the third point that I'd like to make is to distinguish between different forms of drinking, drinking or substance abuse. I'm not going to go into the clinical distinctions. It was already made earlier. But I do want to address, at least in terms of educational approach, I think that there's a difference between substance abuse, be it drug abuse, alcohol abuse, as it's defined, abuse or dependence or addiction, and the rule that exists in the one-year yeshivot that a student is not allowed to be in a bar. A student who goes to a bar to drink Kahlua, or a student that they just turned 18 and they go out with six friends to drink one beer because they have to do something to mark the fact that now they're of legal age, so they decide that they'll go out and get one drink. So I want to distinguish the drinking, which is a regular ongoing problem, or even a one-time occurrence, but the student comes back drunk, blacks out, etc., and certainly for a girl, that's very unusual behavior, meaning in terms of norms, and the rule that exists that a student is not allowed to be in the bar. I think that those two things have very different psychological meaning and they have to be addressed differently from an educational point of view. Obviously, the drinking that is, or substance abuse or dependence, masks clearly is a sign of distress. It in and of itself is a serious problem that can be life-threatening, and I think that it also is a signal to underlying distress that needs to be addressed. So these are the three points that I'd like to start with, and I want to go a little bit into details about these two different levels of, for the purpose of this discussion, I'll limit it to alcohol use and different approaches to it. As I mentioned, alcohol abuse or even drinking once to the point of drunkenness is a serious problem, both I think first and foremost, it's a serious health problem. It can lead to, at its worst, it can lead to death, but if we're talking about, and I'm specifically focusing on a female population, a girl who gets drunk once in a bar can easily be taken home, can be raped, and one time that's it. She can get AIDS, et cetera. That could be just one incident. Could be life-threatening, and I think that it has to be taken very seriously, and incidents like this have occurred in yeshivot where a girl went to a bar, got drunk once, and slept with someone. Maybe she didn't get AIDS, thankfully, but with very serious consequences for her well-being and mental health. So I think that there, where we're talking about a very serious psychological problem, it has to be treated as one would treat any serious psychological problem. Just like, and I'll give other examples, anorexia. There are different views on how to treat anorexia, but take a classic case of anorexia. This is not something to be fooled around with. It's not something that girls are going to grow out of. It needs professional help. And oftentimes, the student needs to be sent home to get the professional help in the context of the family being involved, the family being aware of the problem, and the family being part of the treatment of the problem. The same thing with substance abuse, the same thing with a major depression, where there's a risk that if they can be treated here and get, let's say, antidepressant medication with a positive result, okay, that's one thing. But if there is a serious problem that's life-threatening, I think that in many cases a student has to be sent home, not as a punishment. And this, I think, is one of the key differences, is that what is our attitude towards these kinds of problems? Is it a punishment? Is it something to be ashamed of? Or is it an illness? And I think that that's a very big distinction, a punishment throwing a student out versus an illness which needs treatment. And oftentimes, I don't think that the school is equipped to treat the problem. Now, here I think that you'll hear different points of view from different panelists, and I think that the schools are differently equipped, meaning that at certain schools, I think that the population that they generally comes to the school is one where drug abuse, substance abuse is something that the average student knows very little about and is shocked if they were to hear that it went on. And when their roommate comes home stone drunk several times, this puts the roommate in a great deal of stress. It's something that's not, that the school in general is not equipped to deal with, that's not their general population, and I think that such a school would do the student service by sending them home for treatment, or alternatively, at times, sending them to another school that is better equipped to deal with such a problem, because that school specializes in such a population. And I don't think that there's any that there's anything wrong with recognizing that not every school is equipped to deal with every problem, not every school services every population. Again, I think that an important point to stress is the difference between punishment and treatment. I think that talking about throwing a student out for a severe psychological problem is the wrong attitude. It's not about being punished, it's about being treated. I would differentiate then a second level, which I would say is students who go out to drink, and here I would say that there is a very strong, again, they don't have a drinking problem, but they go out to have a beer every so often, and I would say that with some of these students there's a clear, it's a psychological issue but of a different type, an anti-authority. And these are students who might have not even wanted to come to Israel for the year, but were pushed by their parents to come. And this is, I don't know if it's a relatively recent phenomenon, but it's certainly increasing, that there are students in the school who do not want to be there. And their students forced them, their parents forced them to come to Israel. And these students, in my experience, will find ways to get sent home, meaning that they might go and deliberately break a school rule several times until someone actually notices, and they will get themselves kicked out, and everybody's response is, well, not everybody, some people's response, the parents, the community that hears about it, is how could the school do this? And it's their educational responsibility, et cetera, not realizing, and perhaps the students themselves might not realize it, some of them I think do realize it, some of them don't, that they don't want to be in Israel, they couldn't get the message across to their parents, so they get themselves thrown out. And I think that that is the case for some students, not all students, but for some. Others, I think that it's a general anti-authority trend, and then there I think it's an educational issue, how the school wants to deal with it, and the issues that come up we're all familiar with, the good of the individual versus the influence on the rest of the school, the reputation that the school then acquires as a result of it, and who they're going to attract in the future. These are all very real concerns. While we might want to only think about the benefit of each individual student, that's not the way it works. There's an atmosphere in the school that a school wants to maintain, and it might be that it might be better for the school not to have such a student. We, in our school, had a case of several students who were kicked out this year for drinking. Some of them, and again, differing degrees of problems, but some of them, I would say, it was an anti-being, anti-authority, anti-being there, might have not want, were not in the right school, and some of them transferred to another school where. School for Balei Tshuva, where I think that their needs were addressed, their specific needs were addressed in a better way than in our school. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not a failure of our school. It's not a, I think that the students' needs were better addressed in the other school. So I think that it's important, I guess the one thing that I would say that I don't think everybody realizes is that sometimes when students get themselves kicked out for breaking the rules, they wanted to get kicked out and they wanted to get sent home, and this is sometimes missed by the parents or the community. The third category I would say are those students, I'll call it innocent, in the sense that we had a case a few years ago, early on in the year, it happened to occur during Aser Imei Tshuva, so it shocked, not shocked, but it stirred up the staff a little bit more, of six students who went out for someone's birthday. They turned 18, they went and they bought six beers and went to one of the parks to drink it. And one of our faculty happened to be in the neighborhood, as it happened, and spotted them. So they got into trouble. Now these six girls that don't have a drinking problem, don't suspect that they would have a drinking problem. We've heard from them subsequently, and they got a very stern lecture about why it's against, why the school sees this as a value that stands counter to what we're trying to teach, why they can't do it again, why they're put on probation, etc. I don't think that this is a psychological issue. I don't think that it was even necessarily an anti-authority issue. Here it was strictly a case of breaking school rules, and I think that the conditions or the considerations that come up when a student breaks the school rules should be taken into consideration, meaning when they break a school rule. So it depends on the individual case. If they're generally a kid that seems to be motivated or someone that you think has potential to put in, but they're sort of testing, okay, so you give them slack, you cut them slack, you give them a chance, you put them on parole or whatever. You do whatever you do, and there's certain others that you are looking for an excuse to kick them out because you saw that they're in the wrong place, they're a bad influence on everyone else, and then you come down much harder on them. So I would distinguish between these categories. Okay, I have 2 minutes, so the last thing is how to educate. That was one of the questions that was mentioned to me on the phone, that how do you get this message across? To tell students you can't be in a bar because you're going to get pregnant, you know, well, they don't buy it. Yeah, that's true. I don't blame them. I think sometimes that's the students. That's not us. That's not what we tell them. That's sort of, they missed the middle step and then connect the two and said that we said if you go into a bar, you get pregnant. There are a few steps in between. But I do want to suggest two things. One is a problem regarding the more serious, the substance abuse. I think that needs to be addressed in the school, and I would suggest something that we did at Midrashat Lindenbaum for several years on the issue of eating disorders, is that we had a health night. And in the course of the health night, we had someone speak about nutrition, someone speak about exercise, someone speak about mental health issues and eating disorders. They were also told, and they're told at the beginning, who is the person or who are the people in the school who are available to deal with these kind of problems. Students need to know where to go. The other reason why I think such a health night is important is not only for the student with the problem to know where to turn, but more, I would say, is for their friends to know where to turn. Usually the friends are the ones who come up and know about the eating disorder, and they know about the depression, and they know about the substance abuse. And they're the ones who need to hear that if their friend has such a problem, it is a serious issue, and that coming to tell someone on the administration is not tattling, is not being a bad friend, and is not going to get them kicked out in the negative sense, but is taking responsibility and taking the necessary steps to protect their friend. I think that that's a very important part of why such a health night would be important and useful, not only for the one with the problem. Often the one with the problem denies it, but their friends are aware of it, and they need to know where to go. They need to know that it's okay to tell, and they need to also see that the school has an open attitude towards it, that this is the school is a place that is open to dealing with such a problem and dealing with it in a way that is not punitive for the most part. So that's what I would say with regard to the more serious psychological problems. With regard to the rule itself of not going into bars, I think that that's an educational issue that has to do with our values, et cetera. And there I would address it in the same way that, you know, in Musar Shmooz and et cetera, I think that that's the appropriate place, but I think that these two issues have to be distinguished.
I'm done. I'm probably going to repeat some of the things that have been said before, but I want to stick to what I prepared. And of course, since Dr. Peiser ended with the Musa Shmuz, we all bear in mind the beginning of the Mesil Shasharim, who tells us that it is not the saying, but the re-saying that counts. The blurb for this, the blurb written in the Atid flyer, speaks about facing policy, developing policy. And it seems to me that the issue of policy, which for which there is an educational view, is an issue which affects those people who are running the school, which may differ from school to school. In some schools, it's the Rosh Yeshiva or the principal. In other schools, it's the board. In some few schools, there may be a democracy of the faculty. And that policy will be set at that level. For some people here who are Rosh Yeshivas or perhaps principals, they will set the policy. For many people who are faculty, and perhaps not with a one-man or one-woman, one-vote place, their problem is a problem of the hands-on practice. What do you do with a kid who has confided in you, or you have figured out through all the massive hiding and deception that the kid is using? What do you do on an ad hoc basis? It seems to me that, first of all, the value of what we've done here today, just to find out basic information. What are the signs? What are the symptoms? What should you be looking for? Number one. Number two, to know that for many of these kids, the most important thing you can do for them is simply to speak with them. Simply to speak with them. Many of these kids, I remember many years ago when in America, an organization dealing with learning disabled children and how they could be in yeshivot was founded. It was called P'tach. And when P'tach was founded, although it was very difficult and there were financial issues and it was a financial drain on the community to provide for these special children, nonetheless, there was a great deal of support simply because these children were, after all, seen as victims. They were not at fault. Well, this is the problem that we're dealing with. Are these kids that we're meeting, who are, some of them, not merely involved in substance use, but in substance abuse, are they victims or are they the bad kids? If we take the attitude towards them, and you as a faculty member see them as the bad kid, not as the victim, not as the kid who needs to talk to somebody who has been mentioned may be using in order to gain attention, whether they want to be thrown out or whether they want somebody to talk to them, is an issue. But you don't necessarily have to solve all their problems. You don't necessarily have to become a professional. That's what professionals are for. You're not going to find all the answers to dealing with drug abuse, I dare say, in the Mesil Shasharim. It has been said that reading books can also be helpful. Speaking to professionals, people with experience, can also be helpful. But first and foremost, right in the trenches, on the firing line, just speaking with these kids, just taking an interest in them. Furthermore, we as educators, having brought this matter out of the closet, can now become advocates to the wider community. I mean, after all, if it doesn't take place in my yeshiva, I can't be an advocate of solving the problem. But if it takes place in my yeshiva, in the best of yeshivas, in yeshivas whose names can't even be mentioned because they're unimaginable that there should be drug abuse, then we can all participate in a joint effort. Now, to step back for a moment and to throw a caveat, and this would require funding, but it should be done. We've spoken about the problem. I'm not sure that the sale of 50,000 copies of Jewish Observer, although it's certainly interesting, it doesn't tell me anything really about the incidence of the problem. It doesn't tell me about the etiology. It doesn't tell me about the social geographic distribution of the problem. It doesn't tell me what kids are at risk, and so on and so forth. Therefore, that dirty word, a sociological study, it's not an easy study to be done, but it's a study that can be done, and it should be done. It would be valuable for all of us if it were done. What is happening in the high schools? What is happening in the yeshivot in Israel? And furthermore, what happens with these kids in the long term? Is it possible that for many of the kids, they work it out, and they later on, they're upstanding members of their community, and at worst, and maybe it is pretty bad, they join the Kiddush Club, right? Which doesn't seem to be addressed as a problem. It would be helpful, and we've begun it here today to some extent, to gain instruction for faculty members, for madrichim, particularly for madrichim, to recognize the signs and to recognize what they can deal with and where it should be passed on if possible, or at least where they should gain further advice. Actually, a very helpful thing, and I had originally suggested this when we talked about the conference, was to either begin the conference or to end the conference with a tiyul. Everybody, we just walk out of here and we go over to Yoel Solomon and Ben Yehuda, you know, whatever bar you choose to go, and to actually see what's going on, because this is actually where Eino Doma Riel Shmiel Riel. I was once early for an appointment downtown, so I strolled along Ben Yehuda, and I saw everything that I had only heard about. Now, that walking on Ben Yehuda, I've also been with Yeshiva Bachrim, who refused to walk on Ben Yehuda for good reason, because they told me that they're thrown out of the yeshiva if they're on Ben Yehuda, if they're found on Ben Yehuda. And there is some logic in that. And that's the logic, if you will, of zero tolerance, being found on Ben Yehuda, going into a bar, actually drinking how much, a one-strike policy. It is very attractive. It's very simple. I don't think that it really solves anything. In order to do that, we would have to have unity of a purpose as educators in Israel, and that is, if the zero tolerance policy is to work, then the students can't be accepted in another yeshiva, right? And maybe, Shani, maybe that's one reason why you don't get the call, because they don't want to know. And this takes me to something that I have an impression of, in speaking to kids, of what their experience is in the use of drugs and their attitude towards faculty administration in yeshiva high schools in America. And that is, they have a sense that while the administration may know, the administration doesn't want to know. So don't let us know, because then, if we know, like, unfortunately, the teacher was walking by the park where the girls were drinking beer, right? And the teacher couldn't hide, right? And the teacher knows, and the administration knows, and then we have to throw you out. And we don't really want to do that, because then if somebody starts arguing, but X was doing it, and Y was doing it, and Z was doing it, we're going to have to throw them all out, right? And that won't be good for recruitment or for tuition. And that's already been referred to. In fact, I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday who's a psychologist, very bright person, and I suggested that this would affect the funds that yeshivas have and so on and so forth. And the person said, I can't believe that yeshiva people in Jewish education would be so venal. So I said, well, it's not great amounts of money we're being venal about, but I said, I can believe it in any case. The argument of the bad apple. This takes us really to the issue that you have the tshuva of Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe doesn't actually mention this, but of course in Ben Sora Mora, I'll just refer to it briefly, but in Ben Sora Mora there's a Laman Yishmu V'Yiro. The Ramban explains that he lo humas begodel cheto, it's not such a bad sin, if he's not killed for that, el eliyasir boas harabim, the shaloye takolo la'acherin, that there should not be a problem for other people. I don't think that that's the issue of the problem. I think the issue is that the kids have learned that they can't trust administrations, that they can't talk to principals, that they can't sometimes talk to teachers. And because of that, there's nowhere to turn. And this really is the problem. Ramosha's reasoning, while it centers, there are basically five arguments in this tshuva. You should look at it very carefully. But basically, the model of Ben Sora Umora becomes the model for what Rav Moshe has to say about his prohibition, his iser for marijuana. Rav Moshe was addressing a problem that he felt to be a keen problem, especially for yeshiva bachrim. I'm not bringing a proof for what Rav Moshe doesn't say, but Rav Moshe does not say that the students should be thrown out. Maybe for some people, Dover Pashut, that they should, but Rav Moshe doesn't say it. I will share with you a story that was not on this issue, but of a different kind of abuse, smoking cigarettes, but which you know Rav Moshe is basically not so critical of. But this was a case where a woman was smoking cigarettes in the bathroom on Shabbos. Well, that becomes more serious. So the husband went to, and I heard this from the people involved. The husband went to Rav Moshe and asked him a shaila whether or not he should divorce his wife. And Rav Moshe said, no, you're not chayav to divorce your wife. And as he was leaving, he said to Rav Moshe, but Rebbe, tell me what I should do. And Rav Moshe said, you should love your wife more. That was Rav Moshe's answer. And I heard this from the people involved in the story. So we have this issue with these children who are our children. I don't know any way, I don't know, maybe somebody can tell me, any way to convince a kid not to use marijuana. I know how I can scare him, but I don't know how to convince him. It seems to me that in social psychology, or you know, there are certain studies that indicate that experimenting with things and exploring things might be done at least by certain primates, even at great risk. The issue that we're dealing with, I think, primarily is a kid who's in trouble. A kid who can really, you know, for those of us who remember this song, who really want the tambourine song, tambourine man, because he's ain't got no place he's going to at all. And as the song ends, let me forget about today until tomorrow, and every tomorrow will become a today. That's the kid we're dealing with, and for that kid, the struggle. The struggle is a long and hard one, a long and hard one. And it begins in the trust that he has to establish with the Rebbe, with the teacher, perhaps even with the administration. One final note, and this is relevant, I mean, because we're talking about it as a problem. Obviously, if Rav Moshe hadn't assured the use of drugs, for example, if the tshuva in the Igros Moshe said, no problem, right? We wouldn't be talking about this, right? It's because Rav Moshe, and that's the tshuva. Rav Moshe asked it. But Rav Moshe's iser was in Ben Sora Umora, and the issue of Kedoshim Tiyu, and I refer you again to the Ramban, it's all one thing. The iser based on Kedoshim Tiyu is no small matter. In other words, how do you educate people? What do you say to people? What sugya do you learn with people that is going to make them be holy? It's no small matter. I mean, you can't tell them a story. We all know that the Chavetz Chaim didn't use drugs. You know, we all know that Chavetz Chaim was a very holy person, and the logical connection therefore might follow, right? Or if a kid knows the sugya of Tachfel Kohen. But Kedoshim Tiyu, Lifnim Mishuras Hadim, That kind of level of behavior, that's no small matter. It's much easier, as we all know, to get a kid to change his dress, to daven a long, long Shmon Esrei, than to change the basic nature of the personality to be holy. And if drugs are usher, because we lack in Kedoshim Tiyu, then we might begin to ask about other areas in which the community isn't bothered, in which there would seem to be somewhat of a lack of Kedoshim Tiyu. In other words, we're talking about kids going to Ben Yehuda, or going to the bars, drinking, and using drugs, but the Ben Soru Mora might be seen as the kid who's going out every night, leaving the yeshiva for a few hours, to eat, and to eat more, on his parents' plastic. The Hamevin Yavin.
I've been trying to convince myself that I belong here. For the past 21 years, I've had the schus to work with the yeshiva that's very different from most of the institutions that you mechanchim represent. I work with Neve Tzion. Neve Tzion is a second chance yeshiva. We take boys that other makomas would not take. And one young man said at the grand scene, when we let everybody express what they've gained throughout the year, he said, you know, I came to give God a second chance, and I realized that Hashem was giving me a second chance. So we, since we're taking, let's say, the lower 30% of the class, the ones who need motivation, that's we publicize with there for those who need motivation, well, that percent of the class is going to be 90% who have experienced, who do it because of social, right, but are involved with drug abuse. And we work with it. And if I can tell you that I have all the answers and that I have the approach to work with a young person who is involved in substance abuse, I can't tell you that. Every year, every month, I go through the agonizing effort of trying to resolve what is the best approach, evaluating, initiating, innovating. We don't know. It's a very, very difficult problem. It's a very serious problem. But I can tell you one thing. I can tell you one thing. I've been told by totally objective people that some of the most sincere, the most devoted Talmidim, some of the biggest masnidim and the greatest lamdanim in the Meir Yeshiva, in Lakewood, in Yeshiva University, were boys that I personally know had serious drug problems when they first came to Eretz Yisrael. And some of the foremost educators today who are reaching out to the at-risk teenager of Talmidim of ours that had their own problems when they were in yeshiva. So that it should be known that some of these people are the most at-risk, are sometimes the most sensitive, they can be very intellectual. Very often they are projecting their hatred and anger which they feel towards their parents, either because of abuse or what they perceive as abuse, or to a particular teacher, instructor, or rebbe, or sometimes just at the system. And they project that on Torah. And once you can help them appreciate that, they discover themselves, and they discover their roots, and they change their lives. And it's one of the most dramatic and inspiring things to be a part of. We're not unique in that I think the problem is more pervasive than we know or perhaps are willing to admit. From what my boys tell me, and they have no reason to prefabricate, the problem of substance abuse is extremely widespread. And like Rabbi Edna said, it's in the yeshivas that we're not going to mention any names, of course, but it's in the very, very prestigious yeshivas, and it's a greater number than the rebbeim there are aware. And if a yeshiva or girls' school is not aware of a problem, I personally believe that there's a some degree of negligence. Because if you know the child, and you are, perhaps we, this is part of the thing that we need to know the symptoms and so forth, we need to know to identify it. But I was told by the Mashgiach of a very prominent yeshiva in the States that we spoil our boys, you know, because they can't get along without a Rebbe. We spoil our boys. Now, they come to big yeshiva and they're great learners, but they can't get along without a Rebbe. I think he's making a mistake. I think his Talmidim also, they need a Rebbe. They need someone to talk to. We cannot afford the luxury of Magadei Shirim presenting Torah without knowing and identifying the child and his needs. We're living in a different world. Amatzel nefesh achas b'Yisrael ki'ilu kayam olam malachi. I once was thinking about this, and I had the insight, and I think it has a certain amount of truth in it. The Chazal are not just telling us the great reward of someone who saves a young person's life. Chazal are telling us the mahalech, the way to reach this person. Treat him like an entire cosmos, a whole universe. He or she is a whole universe. And when you know a child like that, and you can work with a child like that, then you can save a child's life. And I don't know of any institution that has today the luxury of saying, we don't have such students, and therefore I think such a conference and the follow-up is of extreme value to Klal Yisrael. A young person who lacks motivation most often, and today it's such a prevalent problem, at least in the young people that we work with, lacks a strong self-image. They lack self-esteem. And almost all of them, right, it could be they have baggage from home, they have difficult family situations, it could be that they had experiences in the one or two schools, or sometimes four or six schools that they attended, and they have negative experiences. It could be that they were just looked down upon because they didn't fit into the mold. Maybe they at one time dressed a little bit differently and so forth. But they come with baggage. They come with the feeling of being rejected. Now maybe 15, 20 years ago, if you were rejected, so you toed the line. And I should mention also that some of them are the most, not from any of those problems, but they have learning disabilities, they're just not the high achievers. And one parent told me a short while ago, right, whose son came to our yeshiva, he was thrown out of another yeshiva, he came to our yeshiva, he had a reason for being bitter, he lost his father, a young person, and he was a whatever, he walks away at a young age from a disease, and he's very bitter, and he was into drugs, and so forth, and he turned out to be probably the most successful Talmid we had the whole year. The best learner. Once he was mother, by the second year, he was a very, very special Talmid. And the mother told me, everyone's talking about in America, and all the yeshivas are becoming more elitist. We want only the mitsuyanim, we want the most excellent type of boy. And we're upgrading. We're upgrading this year, so we're only taking some. One from the seminar told me we're only taking girls that have a certain SAT score. What does that have to do with making a Bas Yisrael, making a vibrant Jewish young lady? Whose son came to our yeshiva, he was thrown out of another yeshiva, he came to our yeshiva, he had a reason for being bitter, he lost his father, a young person, and he was, whatever, he lost his father at a young age from a disease, and he was very bitter, and was into drugs, and so forth, and he turned out to be probably the most successful Talmid we had the whole year. The best learner, once he was mother, by the second year, he was a very, very special Talmid. And the mother told me, everyone's talking about in America, and all the yeshivas are becoming more elitist. We want only the mitsuyanim, we want the most excellent type of boy. And we're upgrading. We're upgrading this year, so we're only taking some. One from the seminar told me we're only taking girls that have a certain SAT score. What does that have to do with making a Bas Yisrael, making a vibrant Jewish young lady? What does that have to be? Whatever. But they said that everyone's talking about it, but all the schools become more elitist. We think everyone belongs in exactly the same mold. Rabbi Scheinman, one of the Gedolei HaDor, is telling us it's not true. And we have to be responsive to that. The way, once the problem is identified, how do you relate with such young people? How... The first of all, sometimes I once had a boy who the first week didn't show up at all. Didn't show up to my class. How was she? So I come into the dormitory and I sit down on his bed and I said, "Tell me, are you feeling better?" So he looked at me and said, "Who told you I was sick?" And I saw right away he had an attitude. So first of all, I'm the mash over there because there can't be any distance because not with these types of young people. I said, "Well, you know, you impressed me as being, you know, an intelligent young man, and that you came here to accomplish. And if you didn't come to class, you must be sick. I came to see how you're feeling." Well, he didn't say that much afterwards, but he came the next day, and the day after that. And today he's a Rebbe. He is the Rebbe in a big institution. From all the boys who have problems, go speak with him because of what he experienced. Right? There's another boy that he was a genius at finding out ways to innovate doing things wrong. And you know, and one day I got very frustrated and I wrote him a personal letter. And I told him, "Look, you know, you're such a great guy. I think if you would use your talents for Torah," I said, "But look, how long can I turn the other way? And I'm trying to get..." You know, and I told him, "Please," you know, I said, "Please help me. You know, when are you going to take life seriously?" Well, he told me, he showed me that letter about 10 years later, right? When he's married, has a family, successful person, he's very much involved in NCSY and all kinds of kibbutz and so forth. And he tells me that was a changing point. What was it? It was simply unconditional love. That's all. Just I just spoke my heart to him. That's all. And now that doesn't mean that I at any time condoned, or the yeshiva condones, what they're doing. Our boys are not Shemir Nagia. We tell them we don't condone it. We're not going to throw you out for it. We'll make rap sessions. We'll talk to you. We're going to, right? We don't condone it. But you as a person, we accept. And sort of President Navon once came to Nevei, and he spoke to the little boy. He took me aside and said, tell me something. He said, what's the secret? The guys like it here. I mean, it's not like, you know, there's no unhull over here like this. And I said, you know, it's very simple. He said, we, our rebellion, are trained in finding what each boy has, something value, something special in him, and making and communicating it with him, and making him appreciate it, making him know that we appreciate it. And like Edna says, it's not so hard to convince a person that it's the marijuana that's taking away his drive to his motivation. You can probably convince the harmfulness of drugs without being that well educated, and you know, even a short talk with Yona can give you the background that you need, you know, to convince them. If you have the trust, it's not for nothing that the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is Davka, the father to the son, because that is the epitome that personifies the trust. The Messiah of Torah Shiva Alper has to be that trust, right? And when I often relate with my Rebbe Revolvi, you know, about some of the things that we do, and when I told him that we have boys who unfortunately go to Ben Yehuda, and you know, they know what we think of Ben Yehuda. When I take them on Tulim, I take them to the Dead Sea, and I tell them that this is the lowest inhabited place except for the underground. But but Revolvi said, if your Talmidim are going to be on Ben Yehuda, then you have to have rebbeim there also, not just happening to go by, to talk with them, to work with them. So, like I said, I hope I'm not wasting your time, because a lot of this doesn't apply to the type of institutions that you come from, but you can work with this type of young person. You can change this person's life. You'll find the most challenging and the most rewarding experience in doing so. But we have to understand that not everybody's going to fit into the yeshivish mold, not everybody's going to remember Chaim Lundis. There has to be alternatives. Alternative schools, alternative in education, alternative projects, and I think we should network and work on these alternatives, and we have to work together with the professionals, right? We couldn't do what we are doing without what Yona does in his counseling and other counselors. And this year we even have a in the afternoon we have a psychologist who has 7 years experience in a rehab, who sits with the boys and talks to them, and he started something new this year, which is extremely effective, a group therapy type of thing, because they together, VAD, group therapy came from VAD, that's quite obvious, right? I mean, the VAD is working together on Tikkun HaMidos, it's a group. So we call it the group, and it became prestigious to be part of it, and they are helping each other come, you know, manage come out of some very, very difficult psychological and perhaps psychiatric problems, and become functioning people. But I'd say that working with the professions is one half of it, but our success is only if we can get the boys into learning. Because that those who get into the learning and become, it becomes a part of them, so then when they continue, and if they have a relapse, they know to go back to it. We did do a research. I'm going to conclude just with this, right? Just to get an idea, and I think that any institution that would go along the lines would probably have the same type of result, that a third of our Talmidim become very, very fine, functional B'nai Torah. Another third get their act together and resolve some of their substance problems and become Shomer Shabbos. And another third, we haven't yet reached there. That's, but it can be done.
Okay. Questions will be taken. Please either go to the mic in the middle or use this mic when you ask a question. Okay.
do you ever give up? Is there ever a situation where you say, this kid is not going to make it, and he is dangerous? Do you ever give up? Is there ever a situation like that? And how would you
introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Cindy Peters. I'm a teacher.
We never give up on the person, but sometimes we feel that we're not capable of working with the person. In other words, at the beginning of this year, there were two boys. I don't think they didn't come with suitcases. They weren't professional drug dealers, but they were involved in providing substances for other people, right? So still being substances. So they were asked to leave. But at the same time as I asked them to leave, I called some other place, and I told the situation, and they are both successful, and I followed up on it, and they are both successful in this other place, right? There's a time when a boy came for a few months, and we saw that he needed rehab. He wasn't ready for yeshiva, and we said we couldn't handle it with him. But it's not we give up on the person, it's that we just don't have the facilities for his problems.
Yehudit Spiro, Midrash Moria. Tachlis, how do you network? We're all here today. How do you do it? So it'd be a shame for this to end just like that and say what a wonderful conference it was, great dinner, and then we don't network. So how do we do it?
Rabbi Sachs has heard your question. We reminded everybody to sign in. But the truth is, on the issue of networking, of course, the first thing is that anybody who has ideas, further ideas. In other words, the conference was, we thought about the conference a few people, but now there are a lot of people thinking about the same thing, and that we should all be part of this now. So I would suggest that Rabbi Sachs be a good clearinghouse for this.
It was publicized, I was going to St. Louis to speak about at-risk teenagers, right? So a mother contacted me. She has a problem, but it's with her daughter, right? So maybe there should be a bank of all the different yeshivas and schools, what they are willing to accept, and who are the people to contact, and so forth. Because it took me some research and some time until I found, hopefully, one or two places to suggest and so forth. But if we have such a bank, maybe they'll facilitate one way of networking.
Pinchas Langer with Michal Neve Daniel. Many of your directions are very sensitive and very warm, but I'd like to throw out a question, perhaps in a larger vein. I'm basically hearing that there is a specific group. There is a group of kids with problems, and you're discussing the issues of how to deal with specific kids with these specific problems, which is true. Perhaps I'd like to suggest in a much larger way, the problems that are affecting most manifestly this particular group are there in every school for every one of the kids, just about, more or less, whether it's alienation, self-identity, self-esteem, integration, and maybe we need a revolution in terms of Torah and Derech Eretz to recreate a curriculum moving away from text, dealing with allowing an individual to learn how to integrate into society within Torah. Most of what I'm hearing, or very often, are messages that are agav taught within the yeshiva. Very often, I remember somebody once mentioning to me that everybody wants to create a mensch. But how do you do that? And most people, a rim and a rim and a rim, but they don't talk at it. They're not, the educational statements, the curriculum, is not really being dealt with in that direct way. We're assuming that the kids will be able to integrate that on their own. Perhaps all students are at risk within the society that we live in today, which is so open and so exposed with everything, and we need to rethink much of our curriculum and much of our goals.
I would just say briefly that you're probably right, Pinchas, but right now, at this conference, we're talking about triage. And oftentimes when people sit down and say, let's solve everything, that's it. So right now we're dealing with a situation that is to some extent coming out of the closet. People are beginning, are willing to talk about it, and I'm for creating a mensch. I think it's a very good idea, but and I'd be more than happy to talk with you about it. But right now I think that we have to limit ourselves to what we are talking about. And I'm not sure that we can start with the grand plan. I think we have to start right here building up. That's my initial response.
I would just say that I think that perhaps it might be making a mistake in the opposite direction in terms of there not being one model for everyone. And personally, I don't feel that when you're talking about issues of substance abuse, alcohol abuse, that all kids are experiencing the same thing. I think that there are different levels of difficulty, pathology. It's true that there are certain basic issues of identity that I think all the students are dealing with, but as I listen to Rabbi Blumenthal, that is not the population he describes. I'm sure that every school has some students like that, but it sounds like your school has a lot more than a lot of the other schools, and I think that as I listen, it reinforces my sense that just as in the regular school system, there are high schools that are Miktzoi, that are Iuni, that are Tipuli, there need to be different schools that address different issues, different populations, and I'm glad that such a school exists, and I'm glad that there's the wide range. And I think that, obviously you're talking about a broader educational issue, but I also think that it is not true that every student has, that they're all struggling with this level of issues. We're talking severe pathology, lesser pathology, ordinary identity issues. That's all I would say on that.
Far be it for me to rain on anybody's... David Refson from the English Lion. Far be it from me to rain on anyone's procession here, but I'm not absolutely certain what the benefit was from either today or any further meetings. I was with Yona in America a couple of months ago. We had a two-day meeting there, which was extraordinarily successful because the agenda was very clear. Everybody knew beforehand exactly what we were supposed to achieve in the 2 days. And I think as a prerequisite to any further meetings, while it's a great pleasure to network and the food was indeed excellent, but the fact of the matter is that I think we have to be very clear about what we're trying to achieve and what the purpose would be of getting together.
Boaz Mori from BMT. I just have a question. Last session, it was raised about preventing the problem, and it wasn't really answered. The question was raised, how can we prevent this problem or keep it limited? And the question really was not answered by the professionals. But I was thinking maybe the people working in the field, do you have any suggestions on how we can prevent the problem or prevent the problem from getting out of proportion?
Thank you. Hineni Drop-In Center for Youth in Crisis. Benjamin is the name. I think the confrontation with those who have problems can work effectively. We have now in our program, while we're hosting homeless youth and youth with addiction problems who come daily for a meal and support, we simultaneously have seminar girls and yeshiva students actually helping them serve the food. And in their afternoon of chesed, by interacting with the youth who really slide it down to the bottom, they learn so much while being in a safe environment. They actually see and are exposed to the consequences of those who slide far away from us. And once they see those results and interact with them while they're supervised in a safe environment, you see on their faces like, wow, this is not for me. I've got to stay away from this. So perhaps, you know, by exposing the youth in the beginning of the year to what is out there, what the consequences are, by, for instance, inviting those who had that experience and who came back to reality, or perhaps let them do chesed in those places where, within a safe environment, they can experience the consequences of all kind of addictions and other kind of problems. Thank you. We're mostly welcome to facilitate you if necessary.
6 years ago, when Dr. Torsi, when we had the first conference, mm-hmm. right? So I asked a similar question, and I asked, shouldn't we shouldn't the issue be confronted by the high schools, the yeshiva high schools in the States? Because that's where our Talmidim are coming from, and that's where they experience, experiment, and recreational, whatever you want to term it, but that's where they get into drug abuse. And he said, of course, but they're not willing to discuss it yet. But I believe now that's where the prevention really belongs, in the younger ages. What the kids are doing now in 8th grade, they used to do in 12th grade, but now they start already in 8th, 9th grade. And that's where we have to get some kind of a prevention education to try to solve this problem.
If our goal is to try to come up with some short-term solutions, triage, to try to solve the problem, so basically what I've been hearing, if I'm not wrong, is that the majority of our institutions are not equipped, prepared, interested, depending on whatever word you want to use to deal with it. It's good that we can network and know which institutions are creating a bank. I fear that bank is very small, and I think we're all now aware of the institutions that are prepared to deal with it. And I say that in kol hakavod, because I always say, whenever I get frustrated in school, I always say that, it's schools like that are going to get into olam haba, and what I'm doing is my little small little thing, which isn't all that critical in life, and I really, on some level, really believe that. The question is, what can we do? I run a girls' school. If I have a girl in my school, for better or for worse, I'm not equipped, prepared, or interested in dealing with it, I'm going to move her on. Either through the format of kicking around and letting my teachers pick up the pieces, or however I'm involved, whatever the tactics are. But my goal as a Jewish educator is not to lose the neshama and to somehow see her dealt with. I'm going to forward her. But Shani raised earlier the stigma that those institutions attend, the parents, the communities. How do we, if our goal then is, we're not going to deal with it. Maybe the professionals want us to deal with it. We're not going to. So we have to move them on. How we can facilitate that and actually make it happen, rather than sit around talking about whether we should or deal with it.
David, in order to move her on, to kick her out, to move her on to another school, you'll have to catch her. But since she knows what's going to happen to her, she might be smarter than you, and you might not catch her.
Obviously, I'm assuming that we've already caught her. Yeah, that's a different story. Ah, you catch him. Anyone wants advice?
I'm suggesting that there might have been girls who were smarter than you and got away with it.
No, I understand that. And I hope they invited me after. But once you've caught them, in other words, if you don't catch them, you can't deal with the problem, no matter, this whole conference is a waste, we can't deal with it.
Okay.
We've caught them.
Okay.
Now what do we do?
From now on, we won't use the term catch them.
Okay.
Hi. Sorry.
My name is Raquel Sanchez. I'm a street social worker and director of the Rosa Institute. We work with street kids in Jerusalem. Some of them, years ago, we had a much bigger problem with kids who were kicked out of the yeshivas, and they became homeless, and we had to deal with parents and getting them into rehab and getting them into other yeshivas and into America. And I find this conference wonderful in that I see a lot of people who've been really, who've really become much more aware over these few years and are becoming much more kind to the situation. Regarding the question that I think you raised, if somebody has hepatitis B in your school, they'll get a shot. Not only will they get a shot, everybody else will get a shot. And it's one series of, I think, 3 shots, so everybody's really, really happy. The thing is that drug addiction is not just a psychological problem, it's also a medical problem. Sometimes it's a misdiagnosis of kids who were not assessed properly, have, as just about everybody has been saying, a learning disability, attention deficit disorder, some allergy, even to foods they're recognizing, can cause a learning disability. The most important thing is that we become aware that, yes, the schools are not properly equipped, that there's no shot for this, that professionals, medical professionals, and psychologists and social workers need to be a part of the process. And yes, there needs to be a solution that is inclusive of other professionals and more money in order to take care of a population that is really, really infected, and that's the entire population. Nobody is exempt from drug addiction or the possibility of it. Not Jews, not Arabs, nobody.
I'm Jackie Goldman, and I work for the Ramah programs in Israel. I'm the guidance counselor. I want to say at the outset that some of my favorite yeshiva guys are Nevei guys. I think that we all know that the best teacher is a special ed teacher. And if we could take what we see special ed teachers doing with their special needs kids and apply those kinds of behaviors to our own kids, those of us who are teaching, then we're going to get a lot more positive results. And so I don't think that the Mash is the only one who should be, or in the Misgeret of Nevei, should be the only place that the Mash or the Mashgiach goes and sits on the bed when the boy doesn't come to school. I do think there is prevention. I work with high school kids, so we have a different issue of whether they're under 18, and if there's a drug issue, can we keep them in Israel or not? But when I first started working at Raman, was involved in the acceptance process, we did not accept kids with anorexia. We didn't accept kids with eating disorders. We were very hesitant to accept kids with diabetes unless we had all kinds of information that the kid was able to take care of himself or herself, a chulu v'chulu. Any kid with any disorder, and there was a lot more lying on the applications than there is now. And we're now known to be an organization that takes kids as long as we feel able to take care of them. And so we'll write a letter and say, you said that you have an eating disorder, please get this information, that information, etc., and we'll talk with the parents. In terms of suggestions for the future, one of the things that we do when we're working with community schools, and we work with Orthodox, conservative, and community schools, one of the things we do is that I, as the guidance counselor, will get on the phone with the guidance counselor in the school and say, tell me about your kids. You know, who has a mother with cancer? Who has a sibling? Who has a friend that committed suicide? I don't ask those questions because those are the kinds of things we learn about the kids. And then we can help those kids, and I do believe that it leads to prevention, because as Caroline said, when kids are away from home, it's a very traumatic time in their lives, and if they have a Rebbe or a somebody who's going to be interested in what they're doing with their lives, it may just matter to them what that person thinks of them, and it may keep them out of danger. Also, there's one other thing I was thinking about is Yimei Iyun for kids, whether it's a Shabbaton in America, when you go to recruit and you do a Shabbaton with your students, or something that you do here, Yimei Iyun that show the tshuva from Rav Moshe, and that sit and learn with the kids and give them the respect that they really don't even know they deserve sometimes.
My name is Miriam Reisler, and this I was working last year in a high school, and we were starting to talk about where different kids were going to go to schools in Israel. And when you look at a whole class of kids, one of the things that becomes apparent is that not every kid is suited for a year of study in Israel. Kids who have learning disabilities, kids who are underachievers, kids who are angry at Yiddishkeit, there are all kinds of reasons that kids are not that some of them are very bright, some of them from a multiple intelligence point of view are very talented, but they're not, but going to for a year in Israel is not appropriate for them. Then, because of peer pressure, because of parent pressure, because of other reasons, they end up here. And I would guess that those kids are at a significant risk for getting involved in drugs. These are kids who are in a place that they don't want to be, they're very far away from home, they don't have a lot of responsibilities, and they're not feeling very good about themselves because they're destined for a year to do something that they can't really succeed at, and I think that's a big problem. So even though I recognize that the goal of this conference is triage, I wonder if perhaps taking a longer view
should be begun here. There should be programs that deal with students who, for whom learning for a year is not the appropriate program. And I've worked with students who've had different ability levels, and one of the things that they've done is that they can do well is they can get involved in projects. They can be volunteer help. They can do all kinds of wonderful things. And you can have a kind of work study program where learning is part of that program, but where the kids actually have a responsibility to something. For a kid who sees learning as a responsibility, for them, learning for a year is a great thing. And for a kid who will come to see learning as a responsibility, I'm thrilled that that happens to kids during their year in Israel. But for a kid for whom that is not a possibility, I would love to be able to put them in a situation where they can assume responsibility and feel so good about themselves and be in Israel for the year and be exposed to learning in a different portion of the day. And I don't really see why this isn't a forum to get such a program off the ground.
Questions, and then we'll try to respond. Again, 2 points I just want to share with you, hindsight being 2020. One is that in order to get to that Ohel Nefesh conference that took place a couple of months ago, there was many years of conferences at Nefesh, Jack's, and a variety of yeshivas that set up workshops to deal in, every question that I heard raised today became a workshop where individual mechanchim got together, worked out, wrote a position paper that was then talked about. This is many, many years of work, and I welcome to share the material that's been developed in the States, but I think you'll have to work your own because I think there's some cultural and some individual differences that need to be raised, including the dumping of our problems to you. The other issue that I think the Mashiach raised, and I think it's a tremendous tool, and we have done this in the States through JAC's, and that is where Mechanchim have an opportunity and students have an opportunity to talk to people who are in recovery from drug and alcohol abuse. One of the greatest rewards that you could see is when you see somebody turn their lives around. And it impresses, first it's an educational tool for people who are not aware of the problem, and it gives you a reward of what you're really working for, is that you see somebody who tell you how he was doing all the terrible things that you hear talk about, and today he is whatever he is. And I think that's maybe through Yonah, that's something that could be networked to be able to attract some input that recovering people have with the Talmidim themselves, and as an in-service to educators. That's Dr. Rabba.
I'm Natan Siegel from Yeshivat Bat Ayin. Good Shabbos. Our yeshiva generally gets people that have flown in, usually without a ticket. And we do a lot of creative things. We meditate, we dance, we sing, we do poetry, we do hitbo dedut, we treat Rav Kook like a Hasidic Rebbe. We really daven. Kabbal Shabbos really rocks. But I would be presumptuous to assume that these modalities are appropriate for everyone. But we... I believe it, but I wouldn't say it. I'd like to share with you, though, a new technique that we've used. Technique's the wrong word. A new program that we've started this year that I think does transfer well to almost any yeshiva. Although my image is in men's based measures, but I don't think that's exclusive. We see ourselves as a very spiritual place, but we'd rather not use that word because everybody uses it, so we see ourselves as an Avodas Hashem yeshiva. And we have, before Mincha, twice a week, 20 minutes of peer review, it would be called by the clinicians. We call it Avodas Hashem Chavrusas, in which Chavrutot of two guys sit with each other and talk about how is my Avodas Hashem progressing? What do I want? And they map out and they do it seriously. And they have lists and they yardstick and they update twice a week, 20 minutes. And we find among the faculty that they come back to us with increasing demands to meet their needs. And sometimes it dovetails with issues of where their neshama is at. Good Shabbos.
I want to share some of my thoughts that I'm Thelma Peskin Halpern. I want to share some of my thoughts that came forth at Yisrael Blumenfeld's excellent comments on his work with specific students on the recognition of the problem and of the need to work more closely, more directly, more humanly. And it triggered off some of my own work in the field of family violence, family abuse, battered women. And when I began to discover the problem, I had psychoanalytic training. I realized I needed family therapy training. And when I applied for such training, the Postgraduate Center for Mental Health said, we have no such problems. We're a psychoanalytically oriented organization, and that's the only kinds of families that we can work with. But I insisted, persisted, and became a student. And in our weekly seminars with one supervisor, every one of the five therapists had cases of family violence in what was supposedly a psychoanalytically oriented approach to the family, which could not be handled on a psychoanalytic basis. One had to recognize the need, first to recognize the problem of abuse, and secondly to come in very, very fast, not in a psychoanalytic way of the whole family, what happened from age one or several months, but right then and there. And in that case, in those situations, one could work very directly and with much fewer sessions. And then when I gave a seminar at the Jewish Board of Family and Children Services, they were working with families sometimes 10, 15 years, and the whole problem of abuse had not been picked up. And when it is picked up and one enters in very quickly, in a few sessions, you can see very gratifying results. And it's very, very warm to work with such families very closely. And that's what you helped me see in your own work with the students, the same thing in the work with the family.
My name is Yoshua Liff. I'm the chief pot washer at Ner Yaakov. And that's my introduction. I'd like to share my thoughts, because I guess this part of the session has really not turned into a question and answer session, but it's basically everyone psychoanalyzing where they're holding in life and what they're doing here. And also if it's Shabbos or Yontif, we're not sure. But I would like to thank Atid for giving us all the opportunity to show up and to really get this opportunity to interface and to network. Number one, I was also involved in the Nefesh conference last year in the United States, and it was also fascinating. It's fascinating to see how everyone here is also joining, I would say, on the board to recognize that let's not put it underneath the carpet and let's bring it out. Let's not just talk about it, let's do something about it. Number two is, as far as the issue of networking, I think that we are a lot poorer cousin to our American counterpart, and we need resources. Most of the institutions here are tuition-based institutions, and their resources are meager. In the United States, you have a lot more social services involvement that you could somehow tie into. And I think that if there would be a meeting of the minds about how to have a little more social service networking and the ability to be able to tie in with professionals across the board, instead of just the individual institutions using their individual professionals, it would help us a lot. Number two, as far as resources, if somehow Atid would be brave enough to, again, like was suggested about the institutions that are involved in the students at risk, and we consider ourselves an institution that is involved in students at risk, and we're very proud to be part of that group. But we need to know not only the institutions, but the personnel, and that somehow we can have a listing of those personnel and those organizations, and it should be a list and sent out to all the participants in the conference, I think that that would be also beneficial. The last thing I would say, just a suggestion, a little bit of vantage point or viewpoint from a boys' institution involved with kids that are at risk. We had a student 1 year who came, who I had met in the interviews in November, and he had a lovely face, and he had lovely features, and he was very bright, and he looked wonderful. And then when he arrived, I wasn't sure if he was coming to a boys' institution or to a girls' institution because of the length of his hair, and very well braided, and he looked like he had become, you know, very, very fashionably involved with very, very long hair. He was a changed young man as far as I could see, changed to the degree that he was definitely involved with substance. And we have to recognize that many of the kids, the danger signs might have been there before, but they're not really recognizable. And as they get closer to their coming to the year in Israel, they're starting to push the gates. They're starting to experiment more. And we, as mechanchim, have to recognize, like it was mentioned before, this 18th year and coming to Israel, getting away from home, is a crucial point. The summertime is usually a time where they're really experimenting pretty heavily. They're looking forward to coming to Israel and continuing their experimenting, and for some of them it's beginning to become into abuse issues. We have to recognize these first few weeks and months are crucial time periods. And if we jump the gun and we don't somehow hold ourselves back from just cracking the whip, it could very well be the deciding factor if a young man or a young lady is going to lose an opportunity to end up being a nice, wonderful Jewish young man and Jewish young woman. Thank you.
Okay. Each of our speakers will have 5 minutes to sum up and respond now. Why don't we start in the reverse order now?
One topic was raised of a prevention. Perhaps it could be researched. I think I personally, you know, I think it needs a little bit more study, but if it's possible for professionals to present a program discussing the dangers of drug abuse, of experimenting and so forth, discussing this with, you know, the beginning of the year at the different yeshivas and girl institutes, you know, would that be something which is a good measure? And, you know, if it's any more out in the open, then perhaps we should try to do our own preventive work. That's one thing I think we should be researched and discussed among the yeshivas and among the professional people. The second thing is, it's true to, you know, to envision changes in the curriculum of yeshivas and girls' schools and so forth is a very revolutionary and probably beyond our scope, and we need to develop for that. But I would suggest that very often we find a young person who has different needs, and we have people in Koldel, or have people, individual people working in the Mizgeret on an individual basis. They can set up, you know, extra programs or research, you know, provide resources for these people, and sometimes that can make the difference in the person's success. And finally, what Rabbi Liff said about resources, it's true that the yeshiva, certainly we have limited resources. If there would be a fund available, if there is money available to provide those talmidim that the yeshiva has recognized that they need therapy, they need professional service, and sometimes it's not received because of lack of funding. Sometimes the parents' insurance is not covered and so forth. And if there would be funds to give the proper psychological or psychiatric or whatever type of counseling that's needed, that would be a tremendous asset to the yeshiva. So those are three specific things that I'd like to suggest.
Just a few comments addressing. Rabbi Revson brought up a very good point, and that is, where does it go from here? Or will it go from here? And I think we've all been at conferences of one sort or another that have perhaps been even interesting, but have petered out. But the best I could say to that is that as educators, we all must bear in mind what the Altar of Nevardiks used to say, and that is, you sow everywhere and you reap where it grows. So, of course, we hope that something will grow from this. But right now, we're in the sowing stage. Okay? So, perhaps something will come of this, and that's why one of the reasons this conference was held, to see whether or not the kind of interest in general in the problem could be focused, whether people would, we didn't even know that people were going to show up. People obviously did show up. There is interest. Where it goes from here, we'll see. Rav Huttner used to say, that's the pshat, l'chuvanim shimuli. That's the, there were talmidim in the yeshiva. It should say, bo vanim shimuli. What's l'chuvanim? He talks about the talmid in the yeshiva, that minretzim vant. He was like talking to the wall, right? After he left the yeshiva, this when he was no longer in the yeshiva, then Rav Huttner could understand that something had been heard. So we have to see what happens after. I agree. But you have to try. We all understand that. As far as the question of standardized yeshivas, different approaches, I think it's very valuable, the approaches for the students in yeshiva. You have to know what students you have in your yeshiva. The idea of the group that that the Mashkiach spoke about, or the Avodas Hashem sessions you have, this perhaps is apropos of, if we think we have problems, when the first yeshiva was established in Nevardik by the Altar of Nevardik, he brought the Aruch HaShulchan, who was the Rav of Nevardik, to see the yeshiva. And the Aruch HaShulchan was a Talmud in Voloshin, and he had never been in a Musa yeshiva, and he's certainly never been in Nevardik, and he happened to come at the time that the Bors, the group therapy sessions, were going on, and the Altar of Nevardik said, this is our yeshiva. Yoruch HaShulchan said, what? This is a base b'shugayim. What are you talking about? They were yelling at each other, critical, you know. Like, even if you only read Chaim Grada, you would have some idea. But if you know something about Nevardik, you really not. So the Altar said to him precisely, we take crazy people and we make them sane. But it should also be pointed out that it's not for everybody, because in the history of Nevardik, they also took people, let's say everybody who goes in was crazy, but it came out crazier. So you have to know who you're dealing with, which leads into the third and last comment I want to make, and that is about the new schools. I certainly personally don't feel that a yeshiva is for everybody. I think that the demands often are very, very in some of the men's yeshivas and the women's yeshivas, and even the name yeshiva means sit. And it's very, very difficult to sit for many people. Originally, the experience of the year in Israel was an experience in which an occasional student would come to yeshiva, but those who came, at least from America, went to Hakshara. And they did very little frontal, formal Jewish studies. But that's become, it unfortunately has become a statement about failure. It's not getting into the right kind of place. But maybe there has to be somebody. I mean, it's unlikely that Atid is going to start a school. But we would hope that there would be somebody in Atid, or who has come into contact with Atid, or has heard, who would want to start such a school and would take that upon himself or herself, because it's certainly needed. So I leave it to you.
I'll just reiterate the importance. I'll put in a little plug also professionally, but the importance, I think, of having mental health professionals on staff. I think that there are some schools that, and Midrashat Lindemann was one of them, that actually employs a mental health professional as a member of the staff and has regular office hours. I think that that sends a message, not only practically that students know where to go, but I think it also sends a message about the openness, the willingness to deal with it, and the fact that this is a part of being here for a year, that some students will want to go to speak to a mental health professional There are also the mashkiach, there are also teachers, there are administration, but some will need or will choose to speak to a mental health professional, and that's okay. And I think that is part of what's changing, the willingness to talk about these issues, and also the willingness, not only, I know that every school has the professionals that they work with, that is sort of behind the scenes, but to bring some of those professionals more in the forefront, and also in terms of in-service training for staff, in-service training for madrichim and madrichot. That's one point that I'd make. The second point, which is related, is parental involvement. While we've all been talking about the issue of substance abuse problems and how the yeshivot deal with it, I think that it's important that the parents be involved as well in the decision-making process and also be alerted to the problem. Some of them might not be aware of it. Some of them were aware and sent the child knowing. But I think that the parents also have to be involved and also in the decision of where the treatment's going to take place. That's the second point that I wanted to make. Thanks.
Yonah said earlier that we are each other's best resources. I believe that. You may disagree with me, but I feel, and I know that many of you agree, chinuch can be a very isolating profession. Those that work in the classroom go into the classroom and close the door behind them and have very little peer support through which to look back on oneself critically. Those that work outside of the classroom, well, this is also true. I believe whether we call it networking or interfacing, whatever term has been bandied about today, I think about this topic or any other topic that we could think of, any other topic of common interest, I think there's value that from time to time, we who share common interests, although we may work in different settings or different schools or outside of schools that are very different, and that the students that are appropriate for one institution are wholly inappropriate for another. But those of us that share a certain common set of interests, professional interests, ideological interests, philosophical interests, personal interests, that there's value that we should come together to discuss these topics. Not because we will agree to work together on a task force which will solve the problem, but because we'll disagree about what the solution is. Because the solution that may be right for you will be wrong for you, and vice versa. But that together, we'll all return to wherever institution it is that we came from, stronger and better equipped to deal with what we're going to meet tomorrow morning. Nevertheless, Teed is very grateful to all of you, and we were very surprised. We thought that when we initially planned, we thought, how many people would come to such a thing? How many people would be brave enough to come to such a program? And we're very grateful to all of you who have joined us today and this evening, and we are committed to serving as a clearinghouse or a resource or a meeting ground for people to get together to talk about the issues of common concern. If there will be an interest, Atid will be very happy to serve as that central body which will coordinate the effort. Yonah has already volunteered, has already agreed to be involved, as have others. If you are interested in continuing in a formal way, the discussions that have begun today to move towards issues of policy, to move towards a more concretized agenda, we will be very happy to facilitate that. And I encourage you to contact us if you are interested. I also would be very appreciative for any feedback or suggestions, or anyone that's interested in becoming involved in our activities, which actually focus on issues very unrelated to some that were discussed today. We will, Be'ezrat Hashem, for everybody that registered, we will send around a directory of all of today's participants. So if you haven't, please be sure to do that before leaving. I'll just conclude again with very deep thanks to all who participated and who worked towards making this event possible. But I'll conclude, I think, on the one thing that we all do agree, which is a certain core to each educational vision, to each set of goals, a certain common denominator which we strive for, which we hope we will be successful in imparting to our children and our students, our Talmidim, v'harehem, kebonim. The words of the Tanhuma in Shmini, lo simchat hayayin, or any other substance, lo simchat hayayin ha-mitzvot v'ha-torah, ki hayayin, kishayatza megufo, hayagan bo balibo. When the wine goes out, ze yotze v'ze ba, v'ha-torah v'ha-mitzvot ku ha-oneg v'ha-simcha ba-olam ha-ze u-ba-olam ha-ba, sh'ne'emar ki hi chayecha v'yarech yamecha, ba-olam ha-ze u-ba-olam ha-ba, sh'kulo aroch. Kein yehi ratzon, that we will all continue to have hatzlacha, and to remember the extraordinary positive successes that keep us going on a day-to-day basis. As was mentioned a number of times today, that we may all merit to continue our successes in implanting Avat HaTorah V'Yirat Shamayim in the hearts of our students, of our Talmidim and Talmidot, and may we continue the discussions that have begun today in a way which will be fruitful and helpful to everybody in wherever it is that we may be working. Tada rabba.